the JLV Showroom podcast, made exclusively for our most generous and committed supporters.
That's what this podcast is all about. It's one way we are saying thank you to all of you who joined Showroom this year. Because of your support, Jewish Learning Venture is empowering families every day to make Judaism meaningful and relevant for themselves.
In each episode, we explore different ways that Judaism impacts our lives. You can download materials for all of our episodes on our website at jewishlearningventure.org/podcast. Today, we're going to talk with Galit Dardashti, an incredible Jewish musician.
We are so honored to have you, Galit. Let me introduce you to our listeners. Iranian-descended performer, composer, and anthropologist, Dr. Galit Dardashti has earned a reputation as a trailblazing performer, educator, and advocate of Middle Eastern and North African Jewish culture. As a performer-composer, Dardashti is the first woman to continue her family's tradition of distinguished Persian and Jewish musicianship. She is widely known as the leader founder of the all-woman Middle Eastern Jewish ensemble, Divan, which released its newest album, Shalhevet, in 2020, and through her multidisciplinary commissions, The Naming and Monajat. In The Naming, Dardashti interprets some of the compelling women of the Bible. Time Out New York called The Naming urgent, heartfelt, and hypnotic, and the Huffington Post described it as heart-stopping. In her multi-sensory piece, Monajat, Dardashti, accompanied by an acclaimed ensemble of Middle Eastern and jazz musicians, reinvents the reflective musical ritual of Slichot using digital technology to sing with recordings of her famed Iranian grandfather. Dardashti is currently working on recording Monajat as the artist in virtual residence at Indiana University's Jewish Studies program. She is also a musician in residence at JCP downtown in Manhattan, New York. As a scholar, Dardashti's publications examine Israeli music and media and Mizrahi cultural politics. She's currently writing a book on the Mizrahi piyut, sacred song, phenomenon in Israel. Dardashti has held postdoctoral fellowships at NYU and Rutgers, and most recently was assistant professor of Jewish music, musician in residence at the Jewish Theological Seminary. As affiliated fellow at University of Pennsylvania's Katz Center in 2020 and 2021, she's begun research on young North American Jews of Middle Eastern and North African background. Dardashti offers lectures, workshops, and residencies on her artistic, academic, and cantorial work throughout the world.
Galit, you come from a very musical family. What are your earliest memories of music in your home?
So I don't have a specific memory of my earliest memory. There are just too many to recount. But yeah, there was a lot of singing in my house. No question about that. On Shabbat, especially, we would be singing in probably more than three-part harmony in all of the blessings on Shabbat. But I can remember some stories from when I was really young, but it's probably because it's been recounted to me so many times. It's hard to know which what memories you actually remember and which you kind of have reformed. But I was on stage performing already at age three at one of my father's performances. My father was a professional cantor. And I came on stage and, sang in harmony with my older sister and my mom. And the story as it goes is that I went up on stage and my parents handed a microphone to my sister and me. And I said, "Where's my microphone?" So already at that age, I wanted my own microphone. But, you know, we performed together not too much later. I mean, later. First, I started performing with my mom and sister, and we started performing at maybe sisterhood functions at places when I was very young, where, you know, everyone would clap for you and they were nice because you were kids. And then later, when we got a little bit older, we started performing with my father. And at that point, we were a dash of Dardashti, or the Dardashti family. We performed all together. You know, my parents met through music. Actually, my mom's father immigrated from Iran, and he became a cantor at the Jewish Theological Seminary, which is a very interesting and long story. And my mom was, and still is, you know, a singer and studied guitar. She actually went to the High School of Performing Arts, which fame that school. And so my parents were performing together even before they were dating. And then once we came along, we were part of the act. So there was a lot of singing in my childhood.
So cool that it was just, I can picture you 3 years old launched on the stage and just growing up with that. Yeah. And you mentioned, Galit, your father coming from Iran. And so we're wondering about the Persian Jewish part of your upbringing and what Persian Jewish traditions were really important in your home growing up.
Yeah, it's a really excellent question. And it's a very short answer because there were very few Persian Jewish traditions that were part of my childhood. My father studied, as I mentioned, which he had no intention of doing when he came to this country. My father was actually my grandfather was a very famous singer in Iran of Persian classical music. And my father, in part because of my grandfather's fame, he became a bit of a teenage idol. He was on TV right when TV came to Tehran. And he had this like weekly spot on television and singing more kind of pop music. And he came to this country, to the United States, when he was 19 because he wanted to be an architect. And there are many reasons why his family did not want him to be in music. It's a very complicated relationship with music in Iran in particular, but throughout the Islamic world, despite my grandfather's fame in Iran. And so my father came here, and long story short, he discovered that there was this profession of being a professional cantor, which did not exist in Iran and doesn't exist in most of the Middle East. And first he actually went to Manis School of Music and eventually made his way to, you know, music school once he decided he wasn't going to be an architect. And then from there happened to hear Jan Pierce performing at Carnegie Hall, where my father was an usher. And then he understood what real cantorial, you know, Western Ashkenazi music sounded like. And he said, oh yeah, I want to do that. So my father really took to Ashkenazi cantorial music. And, you know, I never felt any animosity from him in terms of not being able to sing his own Persian Jewish music. But, you know, let's be clear that there was no, you know, embracing of Sephardi Mizrahi culture when my father went to cantorial school. So my father there learned to be an American Jew at JTS, which, you know, was being an Ashkenazi Jew. And as I mentioned, he was excited that he could make being a chazan his profession. And so I and my father married my mom, who was an Ashkenazia. And so this was really what I knew, other than a few excerpts, let's say from Ashrei, when my father would, you know, recite the Hamotzi. And then he would go and do, you know, so that's, I knew that. But other than that, and he would sing El Nora Alila in the Persian tradition at high holidays, there really was not very much from my Persian Jewish historical roots. Really, it wasn't till much later that I myself decided to really go deep into studying not just Persian Jewish music, but into Middle Eastern Jewish culture. That was something that I really had to study on my own with the help of my father, I should say. My father was very supportive of it when I decided to pursue those studies, but it wasn't something that he thought was important. I didn't learn Persian. I learned Hebrew. You know, it was important to my father that I learned Hebrew and that I learned to read Hebrew and speak Hebrew, but the Persian part kind of got pushed to the side in my childhood.
So you referenced that it was something you had to do on your own to delve deeper into that music. And I'm wondering if you can share with us how you got there. What was it that encouraged that exploration for you?
Yeah. So I think there are a lot of pieces, but I spent my junior year of college in Israel at Hebrew University of Jerusalem. And, you know, there I started learning a little bit about these people that they called Mizrahim and realized, you know, I really didn't know much at all about the history of Middle Eastern Jews immigrating to Israel really until college, and about the, you know, the difficulty that a lot of them experienced in terms of discrimination. I didn't know much about that. And in Israel, I was, of course, much more exposed to Mizrahi culture. And then I started asking questions. You know, my grandfather and grandmother immigrated to Israel in the 1960s. But my grandfather, once they came, he really didn't have very many opportunities for pursuing this music that he was so famous for in Iran. He would sing on the radio. He had a weekly radio spot, and he sang at the Shah's palace and at concert halls. And so I just began to ask questions about, you know, why didn't he continue? I mean, of course, the language in Israel was Hebrew. I knew that. But it became much more clear once I started learning this history. And it was something that after I decided I wanted to understand that history more. So originally, I actually thought I'd be able to go to Iran to do research. There was this kind of this blip, this very short period where it seemed like when Khatami was in charge, that things would change and go in this certain direction. And it went in completely opposite direction. So I actually applied to go to graduate school and study Persian. That didn't come to be. And so I focused more on Hebrew and writing about Mizrahi musical culture in Israel. And that's really how it all happened, is that I started as an academic, and much of my musical pursuits really came from this academic research. And that's how it started. I was living in Austin, Texas as a graduate student, an amazing place to be a graduate student. And there's just a lot of amazing musicians in Austin. And I met some, and a few people asked me if I would form a band with them. And I said, well, you know, if I'm going to form a band, then I want it to be music that I'm devoting my life to now, which is the study of Middle Eastern Jewish music. And so that's how it all started. And I met these different women in Austin, Texas, and we decided, you know, this is kind of great. Let's form an all-female band. And that's how my band Divan got started.
So cool, Galit. And so bring us from those days in Austin to where you are now. What's happening with your music now and with your band?
Yeah. So, wow. So that was many years ago. That was, you know, like 20 years ago that band Divan started when I was a graduate student in Austin. And the band took off in ways that I could just never have predicted. I thought it was going to be this, you know, fun little thing I was doing in grad school. And it kind of took over a little bit and made it difficult for me to sometimes pursue my academic work. But I've loved every minute of it. And that band continued for quite a while. We performed all over the country and beyond. I eventually made my way to living in New York after my field work in Israel, after my dissertation research in Israel. I came to live in New York. My husband was doing graduate work, or my fiance was doing graduate work in New York. And I was writing my dissertation. And then I found out I had got a grant to pursue some other artistic work. And that's how my project, The Naming, came about, which I applied to write these songs about biblical women who, I know we never think about it, but they actually, our foremothers lived in the Middle East. And so I thought, you know, these women should have songs that sound like they're living in the Middle East. This was sort of my singer-songwriter project. And a lot of the songs ended up being also semi-autobiographical, about some different parts of my life or about some members of my family's lives. Like one song called Michal is a song that actually brings together my father's great aunt Tova and the biblical character of Michal. Because when I was younger, my father used to tell us stories about his life growing up in Iran. And I had remembered that he told us about his great aunt Tova, who would put on talit and tefillin when she prayed, when she would, you know, sleep over their house for the weekend, and she would, you know, wake up in the morning and put on her talit and tefillin. And I said, wow, you know, this was a woman in Tehran. And my dad said, yeah, you know, she was never able to have kids. And so I asked her once, you know, why do you wear talit and tefillin? And she said, because I wasn't able to have kids. And so I pray in a way that I believe God would expect me to. I'm not exempt from the mitzvot that other women are exempt from. And I just thought, wow, I didn't, you know that would be something that would be, that would occur in Iran. And so I realized that some of my own perceptions of what women were like in the Middle East were just really not true. And so that was a big part, is I wanted to break boundaries of not only women, but Middle Eastern women, Middle Eastern Jewish women. And that's that song is about bringing the stories of Michal, this character from the Bible, who the Talmud says she wore talit and tefillin, and that the you know, the rabbis didn't disapprove of that. And the same was the case for this great aunt Tova that I had. And so I wrote a song kind of bringing their histories together. And that's that project, the naming. And then my most recent project, which is actually a project that I started many years ago, but I'm only now recording, is a project called Monajat. And I was commissioned to create Monajat by the Foundation for Jewish Culture. It was kind of in its last years of existence. I said that I wanted my next project to be a project where I did something with this recording that I had of my grandfather singing the prayers of Slichot in Iran. And, you know, my family doesn't have very many recordings of my grandfather singing in Hebrew. Mostly the recordings are of him singing in Persian, which he was famous for. And these recordings of him singing Slichot services, because, you know, he would lead his community in, you know, Shabbat services and Slichot services, what have you. I mean, that was not his profession, but he was very happy to do that as a Jew. And as you can imagine, because he was such a master singer, I mean, it's really powerful, these recordings of him singing. So I kind of reinvented this ritual of Persian Slichot, and I'm able to sing with my grandfather in some of the pieces, or sing, you know, responsively with my grandfather, which is really, really exciting and, you know, moving for me to be able to do that, because of course he's, you know, no longer alive. And so that's that project. And I've performed the piece all over the country over the last number of years. And I finally applied and received funding from both Indiana University and the Memorial Foundation for Jewish Culture to record Monajat. And so I'm going to finally be doing that in 2022. Yeah, it's really exciting. And, you know, I should also say, so that's my newest project, but Divan has continued performing and continued recording and morphed into a new project that's now in New York City. And we recorded an album in 2020. The album was actually released with an album release at Joe's Pub on March 7th. 2020, which was an excellent time to release an album, let me tell you. So we're now actually working on the tour that we were supposed to have done. Then that's another project that's happening right now simultaneously, along with all my other scholarly and other artistic projects.
Galit, you have to come to Philadelphia with that tour. We're so excited hearing about the incredible work you're doing, and your project is so moving with your grandfather.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you can tell us, from your time, from your studies, from the work you've done academically, musically, and in terms of just really reclaiming your family's history, what do you wish the American Jewish community knew or understood now about Sephardic and Mizrahi music?
I think I just wish that more of it was integrated and, you know, made to be part of the North American mainstream by those leading and supporting Jewish communities today. You know, I think it's so important because synagogues today are really no longer, these synagogues don't represent one unitary Jewish community as they, you know, they did in years past. Today, we are really all global communities. And it's just a fact that Sephardi Mizrahi Jews are members of all different kinds of synagogues, all different denominations in the United States. And people really need to feel seen and heard. So this is something I do a lot of in my scholar and artist in residencies at synagogues around the United States, and really have been doing for really my entire career over the last 20 years almost now. But I also, you know, I have a vision about how to accomplish this by offering training at key North American institutions right now. And I'm actually working to find funding to help realize pieces of this vision, because I think it has to happen in a more organized and planned way. And I can't be the only emissary of Sephardi Mizrahi music. And I know that it's been kind of amazing just in the last few years, how though, you know, I've really been pushing this for maybe the last 15 years, in the last 2 years or 3 years, you know, North American institutions are starting to actually listen. And that's exciting. That's been very exciting to see. So I think those are the main pieces that I would want to impart.
Galit, thank you so much for being on this podcast with us today and sharing your insights with us.
You're so welcome. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, it's been an amazing conversation, Galit. And we also want to thank all of our listeners who have joined Shomrim and who are making our work at Jewish Learning Venture possible.
And we want to thank our Shomrim for joining us in this year's podcast journey. It's been so much fun. We hope you enjoyed today's and the others that are to come. We'd love to hear from you. Please let us know what you thought.
Absolutely. Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.